the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it in. There's no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
And welcome to Courtside with Seth Greenberg and Dan Dockage. I'm Chris Cotter. We've got a big show for you today, and the reason why we're kind of taping a little bit earlier in the week is because we had so much stuff go on over the weekend, we just couldn't wait to talk about it. Seth Greenberg is here in Connecticut. He's going to be joining me tonight. We're going to be in studio with the games going on ESPN, Big Monday. One of those games is going to be Notre Dame, Florida State. Doc, you're down in Tallahassee.
You damn right I am, and I opened up my drapes today. I looked out, and I swear to God, I was stunned because it was sunny and nice out. I'm used to, like, you know what I mean?
I know.
Hey, Notre Dame stinks, huh? I didn't realize that until, because I hadn't really been paying attention. They, you know, Pfluger went out, and they've really struggled. Florida State, I did them once. I like me some Florida State, Seth. Florida State to me, Cotter. Florida State. When they all of a sudden do what they did last year and show up in the Sweet 16 Elite Eight, don't be surprised because they got some guys, and when they get in passing lanes, they're pretty good. I'm looking forward
to
it.
What happened to them over the weekend, though? What happened with North Carolina?
I don't know how you guys feel, but I feel like North Carolina's playing at a really, really high level, and I think Cam Johnson – I mean, I don't know. I feel like Cam Johnson's playing as well as anybody in the ACC right now. I think sometimes, Chris, you got to give credit where credit is due to the other guy. And the other guy is playing, I think, really well. The other guy, obviously, being North Carolina. Would you agree with that, Seth? Carolina playing good?
Yeah, I think they're playing great. I mean, I was at the Duke game. They, you know, everyone talks about Zion, and obviously Zion and his wardrobe malfunction was a topic of conversation. But, you know, Carolina was ready to play. And Carolina beat them doing Carolina-type things. They beat him in transition. They beat him in execution. And they went ball screen, bat screen, boom, layup. They went inside screen, no bump, boom, layup. Cam Johnson, I get a kick out of it because all of the NBA scouting gurus have Cam Reddish is like the fifth pick in the draft. The dude scored like 5 points the other day against Syracuse. Cam Johnson shoots 50% from the three. He's averaging 16 points a game, rebounds, passes, makes the right play, plays hard every play. I might not be very smart, but Carolina's really good. And if Coby White can just play under control, if Coby White can just be a little bit better with the ball, they're Final Four good. I think Florida State is Elite Eight good. You know, Cabangali is absolutely ridiculous. He comes off the bench. They play 10 guys. They got a bunch of dudes that can make shots. They can disrupt you defensively. They have rim protection. Florida State is really good, but I really think that Carolina right now, Carolina's Final Four good. They're playing at a level that is really special. And Nasir Little is playing better right now. He's playing well. Yeah. He's playing to his strengths. He's getting to the offensive glass. He's running the floor. He's playing with really good energy. And all the people that are killing him about, you know what? He's really good. He's having a great freshman year. He doesn't have to be Michael Jordan's freshman year.
What do you guys think? Go ahead,
Let me ask you a question, Chris. I was looking at this, getting ready for an ACC game. If you're going to pick your top five, you can only have five, and I don't care about position. Who are your five all ACC players right now based on, I don't care. You can have five centers, guards, I don't care. Who's the top five players right now? Not by the draft, by how they play.
And that's a big thing. It's how they play. You know, obviously, it'd be Zion. I mean, like if Justin Robinson is healthy.
Yeah. Do you know Zion Williamson is leading the league in steals?
Yeah, he's 2.4, 2.6.
It's unbelievable, this guy.
Yeah, yeah. They got three guys that are averaging basically two steals a game.
I think three guys on Duke would be on that team, don't you? I mean, you put Trey Jones. We know the value that he brings to the team.
Yeah, but here's
would you have Trey Jones or Kyle Guy or Ty Jerome?
I know. It's a tough question.
You're going to have DeAndre Hunter.
Right. DeAndre Hunter's on it, I think.
All right. So you got R.J. Barrett.
Mm-hmm. You have Zion, for sure.
I would have Cam Johnson. And look, I love Trey Jones, but in the last five games, and he's great defensively, and there's more of the scoring. He's 15 for 50 from the field, 4 for 22. From the three-point line.
Do you think with Zion out even these last couple of games, Seth, he's putting too much pressure on himself to become a scorer now, more from that point guard spot?
I don't know. I mean, like, he's open for a reason. I mean, I said that. I said that, you know, the other day. I mean, like, why would North Carolina guard him? He gave the ball up. His man went right into the middle of the lane. I mean, you know, keep him out of the lane and don't turn it over. I mean, I love the kid. All these guys that have him as a NBA first round draft choice. Last time I checked, if you can't make a shot in that league and you're 6 feet, you're not going to be in that league very long.
Right.
Now, he's a great college player, and he's a great defender.
Let me ask you this. I mean, I know we're all supposed to, and I don't know if this is what we started out talking about, but the ACC is interesting. I know Luke May was a preseason first team, you know, all-league pick, and then, you know, the season started. He wasn't averaging what he averaged, but the dude is having a hell of a year.
He's playing really well now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his performance against Duke was tremendous. Like, is he on the first team? Is he first team all ACC?
I would say the way he's playing now, if he finishes the season the way he's playing now, he would have to be in the conversation. But now, like, you made a good point. Like, Kyle Guy's numbers are ridiculous. I mean, his numbers are spectacular. They're going to end up in the ACC, losing a total of 3 games over 2 years.
And they've had to deal with injuries, too. And Kyle Guy has had to pick up the slack for guys that have been out.
That's what I'm saying. This is an amazing year. Like, I didn't realize this until I was doing this game. You know, in league play, John Mooney is leading the country in rebounding.
You started prepping for this game, right?
Yes. I'm like, hey, I like Moody, right? I think he's a good player.
Yeah.
I mean, and all that. But the first thing you see in the Notre Dame media guide, and I always think about this. I always think if guys are leading the country in something, damn.
How many of those are long offensive rebounds from missed shots from his teammates?
It doesn't. Here, let me read. By the numbers, Irish through at the Seminoles, 1. Junior John Mooney leads all major conference players in rebounds per game in league action with 12.4. That's all it says. It doesn't say brick shot continuously has added to the number. But it's just interesting to me because, you know what? The one thing that you look at, all right, let me go this route with you, Seth and Chris. How many of these guys are pros? How many guys are first-round picks out of the ACC?
Hunter is for sure.
Hunter to me is a lottery. Hunter is a – that dude right. is – there isn't anything
That's
you can't
four.
Do. We're talking down the road, too. So, and I know like guys like Kevin Gelly have gotten much better, but it's going to be – you know, I mean, what do you think pros think about that guy? Because he was just a – as raw as can be at the beginning of the year, and he's starting to get a little bit better, don't you think, as the year progresses? And that body, you can't do anything with that body.
But I'll tell you this. Here's what's interesting about that. It always fascinates me because I just did a game with Bruno Fernando. Bruno Fernando is just the perfect-looking male. I would never wear pants or a shirt if I looked like Bruno Fernando. I would walk around with no shirt. I don't care if it's wintertime. He is just fantastic, and he's fantastic as a player. But I'm reading the NBA stuff, and he's the 30th, considered 30th. And I'm looking at Cabin Gelly, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know that he's any better than Bruno Fernando. You know, I get it. I don't think I know what makes an NBA player. Like Kevin Huerter went in the first round last year. I don't know, but I know this. I know that Cabin Gelly's a good player, but man, Bruno Fernando's 30th, according to these guys. I don't know.
What about a guy like Kumaji too? 7'4". I mean, you can't teach 7'4".
No. 7'4" guys in the NBA today, they can't. No.
You lose.
Those guys
no
are
chance.
Dying breed. Those guys are history.
No Taco Fell.
No, I mean he'll get drafted maybe in the second round, or someone will sign him to a G League. But the NBA isn't like, all right, who does that guy guard in the NBA? How does he guard a ball screen? Kumaji might be up to guard a ball screen. You know, can he get in a dunker spot and finish? Can he catch anything? I mean, the league is so different right now. The league is a European league. We're playing a form of European basketball.
Is Ty Jerome an NBA player?
I think Ty Jerome will play in the NBA. I think he's not Malcolm Brogdon. No. Can't guard anyone. Like you saw what RJ Barrett does to him when he tries to guard him.
Yeah.
That's my gut feeling. I think he's a great college player, and I think he'll make a ton of money overseas. And he'll probably get on a roster eventually. But, I mean, being an NBA player means, like, being a league. Like, Malcolm Brogdon's an NBA player. Joe Harris is an NBA player. Kyle Guy is 6'2". He's not Joe Harris. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
We've
gone
way off the tracks.
All right.
No, I'm sorry.
That's kind of what we're supposed to do today. It's Monday. We've got so much to talk about. Well, what, you know, you guys talked about some of the teams and some of the schools that impressed you, North Carolina, one of those over the weekend. There were a lot of impressive performances. I thought the game of the weekend was the LSU-Tennessee game. That game was unbelievable. And LSU, I mean, look at what they did without their best player. I mean, that to me is about as impressive as you can get, Coach Seth, when you talk about them now being really in the mix in the SEC.
Well, they're in the driver's seat because of the rest of their schedule. But the bigger conversation about the LSU game is the situation that's coming down right now with the officiating.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw that story, but I mean,
with the T-shirt.
Yeah, with the T-shirt, and right, you know, it puts the SEC in a very, very difficult situation where they've got to go and investigate Anthony Jordan. I mean, you know, an average official in a college basketball game blows the whistle between 22 and 23 times. You know, in that LSU game, from the information I've gotten, which I think is credible, he blew it 45 times. And of those 45 times he blew the whistle, all right, 29 of them were against Tennessee. 15 of them were against LSU. Now, I'm not accusing him of anything.
You're not insinuating anything.
I'm not insinuating anything. But obviously, you know, when you're seen holding a T-shirt of LSU in front of you saying "Go Tigers," and then you officiate a game like that, you know, the SEC has got to investigate it. 3 of the 4 fouls on Admiral Schofield called by him. There was a clock situation at the end of the game where I think they forgot to put some time back on the clock.
Yeah.
The last play of the game, there was, you know, the last call. I have no problem with the last call, the foul. You know, there were two plays that Tennessee made in that game. The intentional foul by Jordan Bowen and Grant Williams' foul that were just, I think Coach Knight would say, and I love Grant Williams and I love Jordan Bowen, but dumb loses more than smart wins. Those were just not smart plays. But this situation with LSU, and then on top of that, Will Wade's allegedly being subpoenaed by the FBI or subpoenaed to stand trial and be a witness in the investigation and in the trial, the FBI trial. Let me tell you something. LSU's got more things to worry about than just winning basketball games, it sounds like.
And the problem is now, how much does that become a distraction to this team down the stretch? Because, Seth, to your point, the schedule plays in their favor as far as winning the regular season in the SEC.
And their team is really good. What do you think, Dan?
I think they're really good. Look, Seth, I want to go back to that referee thing, okay? You said you're not insinuating anything. Well, I am. I mean, I'll insinuate a couple things. I'll insinuate, number one, what a lot of coaches have always thought, and it's human nature, that referees have bias. I mean, referees are no different from you and me. They live in towns. They root for people. They root for teams. And I think that it's interesting now, and I think probably good, that stuff like what you just talked about, I know you talked about it today on a radio show, is coming out. I think that's good for the sport because I think that, look, I just had Tim Donaghy on my radio show, and it was really interesting. Whether you like Tim Donaghy or don't like Tim Donaghy, I mean, I don't know why you'd like him, but anyway, he's talking about how in the NBA manipulates things. They manipulate games. I don't think college basketball does that. I think that college basketball has a quality problem, a referee quality problem. They have a numbers issue with quality refs, and I think a lot of it was to do, and Seth, you know this, at least I think you do, over the years, college head of officials extorted, I'll use the word extorted, money from young referees by making them pay, hundreds of dollars to go to their camps. And a lot of guys are like, look, I can't afford that. I'm taking a week off work. I'm going to pay $400 to work a camp. I can't do that. And well, if you didn't do that, then you didn't get into the league. You didn't get work. You didn't get jobs. You didn't get a start. And the truth of the matter is we're seeing the same guys over and over and over again simply because, well, there's not that many really good refs, and now you got a guy who is a fan of a team, and it. I'm glad stuff is coming out, Seth, because you can't hide things and clean it up. You can only talk about things, get them out there to clean them up. So I'm glad you did that today. I thought it was great.
And I think the big thing about this situation is going to be now they're going to go back to other games that he's officiated that either LSU or they're going to go and evaluate and grade every single call he makes. I have a former player that's an official in the NBA. You know, at one time, Anthony Jordan was an official in the NBA, and he got fired. You know, who knows why he got fired. And, you know, in the end, there's a difference between not getting it right, because sometimes guys get it wrong. I mean, just sometimes coaches make bad decisions. The number differential is significant. And now he's going to have to go – they're going to have to go back. But, like, if you question or you have an impact on the integrity of the game, right? Now, think about how contentious this time of the year is between officials and coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have this situation. If they don't address this quickly, if they don't investigate this properly, you are going to have in the next 2 weeks an escalating situation. And I'm not saying that other officials are doing things unethically. I'm just saying pressure creates controversy. Pressure creates reactions on both sides. And this is a situation that, you know, I know Anthony Jordan. I mean, I've seen him officiate games. But, this, you know, I just think it's a situation right now that the relationship between officials and coaches are always contentious, especially more in this time of the year.
And there's no way he could do another LSU game the rest of the year.
No. Here's the deal. Until this thing is satisfied and investigated, there's no way he can do another game.
Yeah.
Independent contractor? No independent contractor. If I'm an assigner, there's no way in the world this dude is reffing a game until this is investigated. I'm not saying you're guilty until proven – you're innocent until proven guilty or guilty until you're proven innocent. It's more about the integrity of the game, and you as a supervisor, as a commissioner – cannot risk that. Do you disagree?
Now this was five years ago that this happened. And correct me if
I'm
wrong.
It makes no difference.
I know, but I'm just pointing out he was in Spain and he noticed, hey, look, there's a Go Tigers shirt right there in Spain. That's kind of funny. I'm going to hold a picture, take a picture of it and post it on my site. That's what happened. I'm just, the people who don't know who are listening, that's what happened.
And then, but here, let me ask you this, Chris.
Go ahead.
All right. Roger Ayers' daughter goes to Virginia. You know what he can't do?
Yeah, he can't call a Virginia game.
Can't call a Virginia game.
Why not?
Because his daughter goes to Virginia.
Because the opportunity is there for people to question anything he does. That's right.
John Clagherty was the supervisor of officials in the ACC. His son was doing Georgetown, Villanova, crazy games. Couldn't ref in the ACC. Let me ask you, Seth,
what happened on Saturday, then all of a sudden becomes in question.
100%. Let me ask you, then, do you think if you're a commissioner of a league?
No, I'm with you. I agree with you. My problem is this, okay? My problem is this. I get all that. I do. If Anthony Jordan was just refereeing a game and this didn't factor into it, then I feel bad for Anthony Jordan. I'm just telling you, I feel bad for him. I mean, because Seth, I always say this. You could line up circumstantial stuff, I swear to God, against everybody.
Sure.
I swear you could, you know, and that's where I totally get what you're saying, and you're totally right. I'm not arguing with you at all. I just say, you know what, it's like, Seth, I don't know if you did this, or Chris, maybe you did this. The NCAA will bring media people in to take you through the selection process over a two-day period, and I did it when they first came up with it. And at the end of the process, what you do is you get your 68 teams on the board, right?
Yeah.
You go through, you know, it's quick and all that, but you got your 68 teams. And then guy Steve Scheer says, all right, now let's look at all the conspiracy theories, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So and that you have them all down, so anything that anybody brings up, you'll be ready for.
Yeah, they're already and you didn't even think about any of the – well, Michigan State is playing, I forget, so-and-so, who was Izzo's assistant, and this team hates this. And we didn't even think about those in the process, but they were there. So you're right. I agree totally with you, Seth. I do. But I feel bad if Anthony Jordan just refereed a game. And you know what I mean? It's like, oh, man.
Look, I totally agree. Like, you know, the guy's always – like I said, I've met the guy, you know, a bunch of times. He's always been a stand-up guy to me. I think the question comes if they go back to the tape and there's a concern, then you have to address it. But how do you put him on a game until it's resolved?
Yeah, you probably can't do it. I mean, I'm with you on
that. I agree.
How do you put him on the game until it's resolved? And look, I understand 60 years ago, and that's great. And this picture's been out a long time. And that's great. It's just one of those things that there's a right and wrong. And like, if you're an official and you're effing in the SEC, you probably shouldn't. I don't care where you are. You probably shouldn't be holding up a T-shirt.
No, you're right.
Of a team in the SEC. I mean, that's just it's just common sense, don't you think?
You know what, though? Let me ask you a question. How many referees right now are going through all their social media posts? Every single
one of them right now. Deleting anything that could possibly be construed as favoritism.
For years. And
here's
that's the thing.
The other part of this is that we've talked about this game over the weekend now for about 10 minutes, and we haven't even mentioned how awesome Javonte Smart and Skylar Mays were for LSU.
Yeah. I mean,
that sort of takes away a little bit from the performance of those guys for LSU. Do you not agree, Doc?
Well, I totally agree. And when you think about Waters didn't play, Nasri didn't do anything. I mean, you look at LSU and you say, man, this is a deep squad. Because I thought, I mean, look, we all kind of think. And I know it's a one-game deal, so you can play without a guy for one day. Seth, I think I heard you say that on game day. And I think you're accurate. Like, long-term, it's hard without Tremont Waters. But I think it points to two things. I think it points to LSU's pretty tough, connected crew. You lose guys, and, you know, it's not like Naz Reid went and kicked everybody in the backside. He struggled. So guys stepped up, and I tell you what.
They've got dudes.
What I was going to say. They got guys.
I mean Smart is he had 29. I mean, Tennessee couldn't keep him out of the lane.
No.
Couldn't keep the dude out of the lane.
Hey, I mean, Seth, what about Grant Williams? He struggles at times, and you could almost predict it. Is it like any time he goes against a team with length, and LSU's got Bigby Williams, and they got Naz Reid, they got guys who are long and athletic. He struggled until the overtime, or at least at the very end of regulation that game, really struggled.
Yeah, he does struggle. If you defend him early and you're strong enough to push him one step further off the block and defend him with length, he has really struggled. Like, I think Kentucky created basically the model of how to defend him. I thought Reed Travis got him a little bit off the block, swept his leg, got him a little bit off the block, and then could play between him and the basket and contest his shot. And I think that, that was the game plan. But, you know, we're talking about Grant Williams. Admiral Schofield was terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you guys this. And Javonte Smart was insane. I mean, he had 29. Jordan Bone played that game. He had an IV at halftime. He was sick as a dog. I talked to Rick Barnes after the game. And, you know, he didn't play his very best. But you talk about handling adversity. You got to remember, this season started for LSU with the FBI investigation and that tape recording that the judge didn't allow into evidence, you know, with Will Wade saying, I got to close my door as they were talking about a potential player, and they handled that situation and moved on. Now they've got the subpoena, allegedly the subpoena, and now they've got this little bit of a cloud hanging over them. Here's the deal. Dan, you say it all the time, you're the best, and the kids just want to play. They don't worry about any of that stuff.
I totally agree. And Seth, okay, so let's ask this question, because we're at the time of year where we talk about this, Seth and Chris. You all right? Final Four team LSU, Elite Eight team, second weekend team. Your thoughts?
Why can't they be a Final Four team?
I don't know.
You got to win four games to get there. From what I've seen, they can spread it around enough to where they're not relying on one guy to be hot, or if he's cold, they're in trouble, and they can rebound the basketball. They've got, we were just talking about length, that they can defend a number of different ways. And they've got now three guys on the perimeter with Smart, Mays, and Waters, if he's healthy, that could score and penetrate. And I think they've got all the pieces, Seth.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're a very good team. You know, some people think it sounds funny that at times they might even be better without Waters, because at times he tries to do too much, so they were even harder to guard. The ball moved a little bit better. It didn't get stuck. Look, they got size and length in their front court. Emmett Williams comes off the bench, and he rebounds like the steaks on the rim, and he hasn't eaten in a week. I mean, the guy just is ferocious going to the glass. Smart can defend. He can get in the lane. Bigsby Williams, I mean, they've got a lot of pieces. If they ever decided to get Naz Reid to the left block more often rather than putting him pick and pops because he can make a three every once in a while, they'd really be dangerous.
Hey, here's one thing. We've seen this. And I go back to, you know, the 30 for 30 on Coach Knight. When all that was breaking, they got their beat by Pepperdine. I go back last week or last year to Arizona. When all that was breaking, Buffalo beat Arizona, and it wasn't even close. Beat them 20-plus. Going to be interesting because, as you said, subpoenas are being announced. I mean, you said allegedly. I've seen Pete Thamel and Dan Wetzel are reporting it. So now that could ruin a team. I mean, we've seen it, Seth and Chris. We you know, you got Arizona. I don't think Arizona make the tournament. But you got a team out there in LSU, man. That can ruin a team.
Here's
that
the
could
thing. They got a couple of weeks to kind of let this settle in a little bit. A&M Alabama, at Florida Vandy. They got games that they can win even if they're not – even if their minds aren't 100% on it.
Florida's going to be tougher. Florida's
Florida,
playing better.
Yeah.
Or they got 2 weeks for it to grow.
No, you're right.
You know what I mean?
It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Hey, we'll be back in a minute, but first, from Vivid Seats, true story. I bought tickets to a Colts game for myself and my kids a few years ago, and we literally sat at the top of the then Hoosier Dome. I did not like that. I will never do that again. Don't settle for waiting in lines. Don't settle for sitting at the top of domes. Shop for tickets to every game with the official ticket partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats. At Vivid Seats, you can see your seats before you buy them, and you're backed by 100% buyer guarantee. Seth, what do you think?
You may find another way to spend your time besides waiting in line. Who wants a waiting line? Dan Dockett, you don't wait in line. You know why?
No.
Because you use Vivid Seats. But you'll be closer to the action than ever before. Head over to Vivid Seats, the largest independent ticket marketplace around, and spend less time in the waiting room and more time in the great seats of your choice.
So don't buy just any seat. Get a Vivid Seat today. What did you guys make of some of these other games? Texas Tech gets the win against Kansas. Not that big, not a surprise. I mean, because you talk about how well Texas Tech has played at home, but I don't know if people around the country really know how good Texas Tech can be, Seth.
Well, I'll tell you the crazy thing about Texas Tech to me. All right, in this win streak that they're going through right now, 5-game win streak, they're making 12 threes a game. 12 threes a game. They're shooting 47% for 3-point line. So this is a tenacious, aggressive, changing defense. This is a team that's athletic, and the development of Odiasi and the development of Tariq Owens as rim protectors and guys that can rebound the defensive end and do all that good stuff has been great. But now on top of that, instead of Jared Culver just trying to make a play, they got more dudes making shots. This is a Texas Tech team. I don't have them as a Final Four team, but I got them as a potential Elite Eight team. And I got them as a team that really believes in what they're doing, and they're getting better. They're getting better. They don't rely on just one guy, and they're a team that you would not want to see in your bracket.
There you go. There you go.
Do they win the Big 12, or does the winner of this game tonight between Kansas and Kansas State win the Big 12?
No, they're losing tonight. Now, Kansas State's losing tonight. Kansas State's winning the Big 12.
That's happened. So that's happened.
Kansas State's winning the Big 12. All you guys have told me I was losing my mind.
Oh, shut Kansas up. You got it right once late. Every three. Stop.
A year late. Iowa had been the Final Four last year. Yeah. All right. Obviously, they were Rip Van Winkle. They're still sleeping with Kansas State. Now that Dean Wade's back, 10 more points a game. Barry Brown has got as good a middle game as anyone. He's shooting 38% from the three. They actually can score. You know they defend. Bruce Weber, the most underappreciated coach in America.
Risen from the dead, too. They were gone. Your Iowa pick, Coach McCaffrey apologized to you about that Iowa
Made
pick
you
last
look like
year.
An idiot.
I thought Weber was going to have
myself.
I thought Weber was going to have to apologize to you, too, midseason. But, boy, have they turned it on. They've looked good. But you think no chance tonight inside Fog?
What do you think, D-Squared?
No chance tonight inside Fog because, well, God bless Kansas State. God bless Bruce Weber. They just don't win inside Fog. Look, let's be honest. If you're ever going to win inside Fog, you're going to win tonight inside Fog.
Yeah.
How about that?
How about this? Quick turnaround for both these teams 48 hours after they last played, and Kansas State had a snoozer. Kansas State just walked all over Oklahoma State, and Kansas had a hard fought battle, set to your point, against a grinding, gutty defensive team that runs you off.
They didn't have a hard fought battle. They laid down. They were never in the game. What do you mean a battle?
So in other words, that was actually good for
them.
That was good for them tonight because they didn't put forth a very big effort on Saturday.
I got a question. If you're Bill Self, all right, you know you got Kansas State turning around, D squared.
Yo,
what'd you do yesterday?
I personally kill everybody, but that's just me.
No rest for the weary then, huh?
What? I mean, look, I want everybody afraid to lose. You know what I mean? I want everybody so afraid to lose that they lose their mind.
How long flight is that? Lubbock charter.
Oh.
6 o'clock. That was a 8 o'clock game.
Yeah.
All right. So that ends at 10, which, all right, it ends at 10. You're out of there at 11. What time do you think you get back from that trip? 12-1?
Never. Never. I don't
evening
know,
practice
man.
And film?
If it was old school, we'd be practicing at whatever time we got back.
Exactly.
We got back 2 in the morning. I don't know. I mean, look, the rules are different now. Kids are different. And, at the end of the day, you just go about your business and you do your thing. That's all. That's it, right? I mean, that's all you do.
Well, let me give you this one thing, all right? Michigan State, let's change the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State, I'm going to put 3 coaches together because everyone says you can't coach guys hard anymore. Chris Beard coaches his guys hard. Mick Cronin Mick Cronin is 23-4. And now getting to the story, Tom Izzo just beat the crap out of him. He beat Michigan pretty good, all right, without Josh Langford and without Nick Ward. How does that happen?
No offense, man. I mean, Seth, would you agree? In modern college basketball, what do you call it? You get stuck. If you get stuck, you can't play.
You get stuck. Rock fights and getting stuck, two of my favorites.
Yes.
Well, what happened to Michigan? Michigan wasn't getting stuck earlier in the year.
Iggy, can't you see? They're playing him to drive. He's having to make jump shots contested. Off the bench, I don't know. Like Eli Brooks, I don't know. I mean, he's, I hate to criticize him, but the key is Jordan Matthews. Jordan Matthews yesterday, he got stuck. Charles Matthews got stuck. Holy cow. He got, Matt McQuaid guards. Matt McQuaid guards hard. Charles Matthews got stuck. Man.
They didn't let him get to his right hand. They didn't let him and Simpson get to their right hands.
Is this the best coaching performance you've ever seen from Izzo? This team has lost a lot at the beginning of the year. Then they've dealt with injuries all year. Langford basically hadn't played the entire season, and now they lose Ward. They've won 5 games in a row, and they're in first place in the Big Ten.
It's pretty good.
I mean,
what do you think?
It's about as good as you can do.
I know one thing. I spoke to him after the game, and we know he's happily miserable all the time.
Yeah.
I actually heard a sense of joy in his voice that was almost – it was so shocking, I had to call Dane Fife to make sure I wasn't there. Now, that
man.
Could go – hey. That could disappear quickly. They got they got games that they're going to play. They got, I think, Nebraska coming up, who's desperate, and they got someone else who's coming up that, that could go away quickly. But I mean, now think about that. What he's done is great. I mean, how about Kenny Goin, Xavier Tillman? Dan, you're around that league all the time. Are they far exceeding your expectation of them?
Kenny Goins has, in my opinion, character matters in college basketball, and I love that kid. Xavier Tillman, you told me about going way back. You did. Oh. You told me he lost weight. Look at Xavier Tillman. So you know what I did? I started looking at Xavier Tillman. And you know what I found? The biggest calves in college basketball and a dude that can straight ball. I tell you who has seeded my expectations. I'm not going to lie. I don't even have stats from yesterday. I just watched the game. Matt McQuaid has exceeded my expectations. Searching for the shots a little bit, not just hanging out. And Seth, I'm telling you, my man guards. I mean guards hard, hard, and guards everybody. It's fantastic. It is. It's really, really, really fun to watch. The development of Tillman, the development of him. And you know what? At the end of the day, Cassius Winston, what do you – I don't know. Is he? Hey, look, I know Zion Williamson's a player of the year, but damn, 27 last night against the best defensive player in the country? That ain't bad, Brother Reed. That ain't bad.
Cassius Winston impacts everything. I mean, he really does. I mean, he makes those guys better. Kenny Goins, he can pick and pop and make shots and all that jazz. But Cassius Winston, who turned it over kind of at a high rate earlier in his career, I mean, he's been the amount of minutes he has to play. I mean, he's playing crazy minutes and has been consistent. Yeah, Michigan, the Big Ten is such a well coached league.
Big Ten is ridiculous.
It really is. I mean, you watch Purdue play and how they execute and what they do, and like I think they're really limited. Yet everyone's where they're supposed to be, and you know, I just think the league across the board. Like, I know you always talk, Dan, about how, in terms of game planning and scouting, they're such a well-scouted league. I just think that there are some coaching dudes in that league.
You mentioned Michigan State coming up. They got at Indiana coming up this weekend.
Payback game.
Yeah, I know.
Payback!
Then you mentioned Nebraska. They get them at home, and then they wrap up with Michigan at home. So it's really just a couple of weeks between those two games.
The Purdue folks cannot be happy with Michigan State winning at Michigan, because the thought there was they were going to split. You know, the home team's going to win, and Purdue was going to ride into the sunset playing against the easiest schedule. Now that's changed because Michigan State went into Ann Arbor and won. But look, bottom line, I worry about the Big Ten in the tournament because I don't know that they can shoot the ball. I don't know. Iowa shoots the ball from different positions. And a word about Jordan Bohannon, please. I don't know if you saw this, but Friday night, Jordan Bohannon put on, as Don Fisher, 45 years as the Indiana University men's basketball radio announcer, described as the greatest collegiate shooting performance I've ever seen in my life in the clutch. He hit three. If you didn't see it, honest to God, this wasn't like Steve Alford, click your feet, you know, step into a jump shot. These are fall back jacks, Dick the Skull Barnett, falling out of bounds threes for the win. It was fantastic. It was really, really good.
Knocked down
so
three of them in the overtime period.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
And they needed to win that game, too.
How far is Indiana from? Like, Indiana's been close in a bunch of games.
Oh! You know what? So, all right, Seth. This is why coaching stinks. All right? Indiana, I'm ripping Indiana. I'm killing them. Everybody's killing them. They've lost. All right, whatever. They got crushed in Minnesota. Fine. They are up three under a minute, and C.J. Jackson throws in a three to tie the game, and they lose at the buzzer. Then they don't get what happened? They didn't block out Purdue's guy, so guy jumps over their back, two-point game, or tie game at that time with like 3 seconds to go. Go get that rebound over the back call. Then they don't make a free throw. Rob Finnessy against Iowa. Indiana could be looking at 3 out of 4 they've won, and the world is a happy place, and they're probably in the tournament. That's why coaching stinks. That's why coaches drink whiskey. They don't just drink beer at the end of the year. They go to whiskey. Brutal.
College basketball is just, I think it's fascinating. And the tournament, who gets in, who doesn't get in, is going to be fascinating. Do you take the low majors that have beaten no one but have 25 wins versus the high majors that, you know, really haven't much to show for it except that they've won half of their league games or a little less than half? I mean, the whole thing to me is going to be fascinating.
I think this year we're in an interesting and unique spot where it doesn't seem like you rarely have in the same year a you know, a Power 5 conference really struggling like the Pac-12, where you're probably going to get one team in, and at the same time, you have some mid-major or high-major conferences also maybe just getting one team in. So usually you have one or the other. You know, if you have a Power 5 conference that's down, you usually have, whether it's the Mountain West, whether it's the West Coast Conference or some other conference getting two or three teams in. I don't think you have that this year in any of those other conferences, right? I mean, I can't find one that you can look at and say, you know, this conference is getting two or maybe three teams in. No, nowhere.
No, I think it's going to really be, I mean, this is the year to be on the bubble. If you're just decent, this is year to be on the bubble.
Indiana's still on the bubble.
Stop it.
I'm telling you, because of the lack
They're
of other teams.
They're not on no bubble.
Stop at a bubble.
Is Nebraska right. still on the bubble?
No.
Okay, well,
no.
You keep taking teams off the bubble. Who's going to be
They're
on
gone.
It? I got to find 68 teams.
Yeah, well, look at
Indiana's
Bowling Green.
Indiana's not on the bubble.
Indiana.
Okay, so you're saying Bowling Green. So now you're giving me two teams out of the MAC, and neither one of those teams wins that conference, three teams out of that conference maybe? Are you gonna get Belmont? Am I going to get both Murray State and Belmont in? Is Davidson lost to Dayton the other night.
I reserve the right to go Digger Phelps here in reverse. Digger Phelps always had 79 teams in the tournament.
That's
I
Coach
reserve
Martin
the
now.
Right to go to 33. That's right. It.
And just leave some blank slots in there. You get a bye.
Hey, all I know is Coach Vitale is the greatest because he's going to defend little guys and say, let me tell you something. You know, they have 24 wins. How can you? You know, and then he's going to take Alabama at 7-7 or whatever and go, you know, I'll tell you what, you played their schedule. I mean, and that's the great thing because, I mean, we're all in the same place. We go, you know, hey, that team had a heck of a year. Yeah, but they didn't beat anyone. And we're all going to go, hey, they played in the SEC. You know, the SEC is great this year. Being 500 in the SEC, Bobby Kremnitz used to say, 8-8, just great. And you know, 8-8 and everything's great.
Got him in every year.
That's in the tournament every year. I won 11 games twice, and I sat in the NIT bubble.
One of those years you definitely should have been in. The other one, not really sure about that. One for sure.
If that happened, I wouldn't be talking to you, and look how different my life would be.
Oh, but I'm sure you're glad that you've ended up where you are.
I get to hang out with my man D Square. Doesn't
yeah.
get any better.
And you get to hang out with Jay Will and I tonight here in studio as we watch D Square doing
yeah,
this.
Yeah, but you're
game.
Going south on me tomorrow.
I am. Yeah, tomorrow is I'm taking a little time off because you don't want me going crazy. I'd be going stir crazy in here if it wasn't for that. I've been going hard since August, since football season started.
You have been going hard.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you for having my back on that. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to pick some games because as good as of a weekend last weekend was, we got a lot coming up this week and this upcoming weekend. So we'll take a quick break back to pick some games. All right, welcome back to Courtside. Let's pick some games, and let's start in the Big East. Seth, what is going on with Villanova? We got Marquette and Villanova coming up on Wednesday night.
They can't score. I mean, they have two guys who can score, you know, Eric Pascal and Phil Booth. And yeah. After that, they don't know what they're getting at anyone. There's a very small margin of error, and Jay Wright's incredible. They'll be an NCAA tournament team, and I can't see him getting past the first weekend.
So who do you like in that game, Marquette or Villanova? You going to go with Marquette?
Yep, Marquette.
Okay. Doc?
Hey, I just say that a word about Travis Steele. I'm very happy for Travis Steele. I hired Travis at Indiana at Xavier, and he got a big win, and they've been on his backside, and Xavier's a tough job, man. Xavier expects to win, let's be honest. But I'm happy for him. I'm taking Marquette, and I swear to God, I'm going to say this every week on this radio show until they win a national championship. When I first saw Marquette get blasted by Indiana, I thought, what's all the fuss about? There's no fuss here. There's nothing to see here. Move along, people. And now I watch Marquette, and I think, man, this is fun, right? This is fun. So anyway, I'm taking Marquette because I just think Marquette is one of those teams that's developed into a really close-knit, good team.
Mm-hmm. Kentucky at Tennessee, Saturday, Thompson Bowling Arena, the rematch of this one. Doc, what are you thinking?
Who is it?
Kentucky at Tennessee.
I'm arguing with a guy on Twitter. I'm going to take Oh, boy, I like Kentucky. Damn, I like Kentucky. Do I like Kentucky enough to take them over Tennessee in Tennessee? Yes, I'm taking Tennessee. No, I'm not. I'm taking Kentucky. I think Tennessee is finally coming down to earth. I think my cats are exploding. P.J. Washington, E.J. Montgomery, if you have initials for your first name, then you're doing good stuff. I'm taking the Cats on the road, and I'm not sure why.
Seth,
I'm believing in Kentucky. I'm believing because they're guarding. They're guarding the three better, and those dudes pass the ball, and a different guy can step up any given night. I mean, like one night, Tyler Hero gets 12 rebounds, the other night in our college game day game, and then the next night, Kellen Johnson gets 17 rebounds. So I mean, like, you know, to me, as I look at this, I mean, they just got a lot of guys that are buying into what they need to, whatever they need to do to win that night.
All right, how about Ohio State at Purdue? I can't figure out Ohio State. Ohio State's lost 3 out of 4. I think C.J. Jackson was hurt in the Maryland game over the weekend. Seth, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, this is a tough one. Who they got to get?
Yeah, it's Ohio State. It's Ohio State at Purdue, 2 o'clock on ESPN.
I can't go against the Fighting Mac Painters. That place is one of the most underappreciated environments in college basketball.
Doc, what are you going? You're not going on.
I'm not going on. Student is
not talking to you if you don't pick him.
Yeah, I mean, you're not.
I don't care. Then good. Then I don't have to spend money. If my kids aren't, my daughter's like, Dad, if you keep saying this, I'm not going to call you. I said, good. It costs me $150 every time you call me. No, I'm going with the Fighting Matt Painters. I'll be doing the game, but I'm going with the Fighting Matt Painters until further notice, man. I think that team, Seth, Grady Eifert, his dad, Greg, I played against a real tough guy. His brother Tyler's an NFL, great NFL tight end if he can stay healthy. But Grady has made such a difference just being a glue guy. He's a Swiss Army knife. I like Purdue. I do. I like Purdue. I like my son. I like Coach Holtman. I like Ohio State. Yep. But I like Purdue, Chris.
What do you think of this game in Maryland over the weekend, too? This is Michigan at Maryland. That's interesting on Sunday. As we always get a good Big Ten game on Sunday. We've got to get another good one this Sunday. Seth, what are you thinking here? Michigan at Maryland.
I'm all in on the Fighting Terrapins. I just think that.
You are over Michigan.
Yeah, here's the thing. I compare Anthony Cowan to Juan Dixon in terms of his toughness. I think that the two inside guys, the only thing that perplexes me is at times Maryland throws it to the wrong team, which is never a good thing, and they don't give those big guys enough touches. But having said that, I think at home, I think Maryland wins this game.
You know I like Maryland.
I know you do.
I like Maryland, but I don't like them as well as Michigan. And I think Maryland has bad passing. I do. They don't pass the ball. Yeah, and even on that, they don't put the ball in the right spots. But you know what? I'm going to take Michigan. I'm going to take Michigan, but I'm not strong about it because I do like Maryland. I think this Wiggins kid's going to be a pro down the road, and I love Bruno Fernandes. I love Bruno Fernandes. I don't like Bruno Fernandes.
Give me a little accent. Give me a little accent out of it.
Do what?
Bruno Fernando.
Fernando. I wish that Jalen Smith, you know what, Jalen Smith's really good, sticks, but he goes about 1/3 speed. If Jalen Smith just did, like if he was smart enough to just say, you know what, I'm going to do what Bruno Fernando does, Jalen Smith be a first-round pick after this year. It's awesome.
One thing about Maryland, Michigan's got Nebraska at home on Thursday before they go to Maryland over the weekend, so that might be an opportunity to kind of get rid of that Michigan State game. You know, feel good about themselves, do some things. Maryland has got at Penn State, and we certainly saw with Michigan a couple of weeks ago, sometimes it's not fun to go to Penn State midweek. So we'll keep an eye on that situation, win or lose in those midweek games coming into this game here with Michigan at Maryland on Sunday. That's it for us. Thanks to Vivid Seats. for helping us bring the Courtside Podcast to you. Subscribe wherever you get your shows and rate and review us in Apple Podcasts. See you next week, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.